You're listening to Federal Prison Authority Presents Around the Block with Bruce Cameron and Susan Giddings, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody.
Hi.
Hello, Susan.
Hello.
Yep. Welcome to another episode of Federal Prison Authority Presents Around the Block. I'm Bruce Cameron, along with Susan Giddings. We're here giving you another great show today. Today, we decided to answer questions. We've had several people ask questions on our website, our Facebook or YouTube, or text us questions. So we're going to go ahead and at least dedicate the first part of the show. We'll see if it takes the whole show. It might.
There were a lot.
There were a lot. So,
you know, even though the Facebook is focused on the First Step Act and early release, we get a lot of folks just asking a lot of questions, whether it's related to reentry and supervision or arrival or things in between. So, we just thought it would be a great opportunity. Got a whole hodgepodge of things here. So why don't we kick it off with had a question regarding in transit status. And what is the longest time you can be kept in a holdover facility while in transit? The reality is there is no timeline. Most people, it can be anywhere from a few days, sometimes overnight, depending on what route you're on. But, you know, it can be weeks. Know for a fact, folks who are in holdover out in Hawaii, the Marshal Service does not do frequent transports from FDC Honolulu. So you could be sitting in transit there for 6 months. And of course, during the pandemic, when, you know, everything shut down, we had folks in holdover status 4 months.
Right.
So.
And that can be in a BOP facility or even a place like Pahrump for another type of a holdover, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. What a lot of folks don't realize is the Bureau doesn't control that. All movement is handled through a system called JPATS, and that's called the Justice Prisoner and Alien Transportation System. And that is a U.S. Marshal system. The Bureau does have liaisons that work with them, but those manifests and those routes that are established, that all is handled. That's all handled by the Marshals. That's control. They set that up. And the Bureau are participants. They use Bureau buses, but they also use Marshal vans and Marshal transports. But the Bureau is really partners with that system, but they control that. So, which it can be a challenge.
Yeah, it can be a challenge, and it's frustrating. And we've had clients, you know, that were in transit and waiting to get there to their destination, and just not much you can do. There's not much, you know, control. They're going to get out of there when they're going to get out of there. But
that's why we always tell clients, you know, whenever possible, when you're voluntary surrendering, surrender directly to the institution. Because when you voluntarily surrender to the Marshal's office, there's no way to know how long it's going to take you to get to the institution. And while that time is being served toward your sentence, those are not programming days. When you are sitting in county jails or going from bus to airlift and to another bus.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we're going to have a case here shortly. They got a reduction in sentence, and it was great. But sadly, the front end of that sentence was served. A lot of it was in county jails and as a U.S. Marshal holdover. And man, it's just, you know, they're not going to be able to get FSA credits for those days. You know, it was coming off the sentence. But anyway, it just underscores, please, if you can, get to your BOP institution as soon as possible so you can get in earning status if you're able to. So
a couple questions on the process of getting halfway house. One person asked, how does it work? Do you have to have requested and Does it have to be requested by the judge when you're working on your plea? No, that is a pre-release placement. Now, can a judge, as part of your supervised release, order a public law placement? 100% they can. But in terms of bureau and pre-release placement, that is all handled within the institution and the regional reentry offices. Judge Nutz is not part of that. So, and that kind of dovetails into the next question, which the person asked, where does the packet go, the referral packet go, after it leaves the institution? Does it go to the reentry office? Does it go to the region? Does it go to DSCC? All referrals are handled via the 22 reentry offices that the Bureau has across the country. Think of them as mini regions. You know, there are 120 institutions, there are 6 regions. There are 22 regional reentry offices, residential reentry offices. Some of them handle part of a single state. For instance, you'll see the part by districts like North Texas. The Dallas office handles Texas, North Texas, Louisiana, and part of Oklahoma?
Yes.
Part of Oklahoma. Yep. But the San Antonio office handles East Texas, Southern Texas, but East Texas comes all the way up to the Dallas suburbs, right. Just to further confuse people. And does San Antonio have one more? Or does it just have the 2 districts? Trying to remember.
Well,
anyway, so, and then in other cases, it may be they handle a single state. It just really depends on the location.
So, yeah. So even sentences that are as low as 12 months in a day or a year-ish or whatever, the case manager is going to look at halfway house, possible halfway house placement for you. You don't have anything, you don't have to request it. You'll be wanting, that'll be a discussion that you'll have. Everybody with a longer sentence, of course, that is part of the process, is reintegrating back into society, and that includes some sort of a halfway house and or home confinement placement or both, depending on your situation. So for sure, the folks with the longer sentences don't have to worry about, is this something that I need to worry about at the beginning of my trial or no, it's going to be built in. So So yes, that'll be a discussion that virtually everybody has with their case manager.
Now we have seen some cases where they had a really short sentence and the judge recognized they weren't going to realistically get some kind of reentry and ordered a public law placement as part of supervised release. And a public law placement refers to any term in halfway house or home confinement, which is part under probation. It's after the release from the Bureau. As a case manager, I used public law placements when, for whatever reason, I couldn't get an individual a pre-release placement, but they still needed transitional services. And I'd reach out to probation and say, hey, this is the situation we're dealing with. He doesn't have a place to go to, but this is why I can't get him into pre-release placement. He's amenable to post-release placement. So we go through that process and get their supervised release term amended.
Yep. Yep.
Had someone ask about the sentence computation data sheet, the stuff, the printout that the incarcerated population can get covering their sentence. The sentence computation covers all the relevant data. Start date of the sentence, when the offense occurred, what offense was it? Is there supervised release? How much jail credit, et cetera? It covers everything. But on the front page of it, when it talks about the offense, there is an offense code, and then there is a narrative section next to that that includes what the offense was. And the question was, is what's that offense code? And they were asking the question in the context of FSA eligibility. And the answer is that offense code, that 3-digit code, is a internal bureau code. It has nothing really to do. I mean, it's the computer code. It's not the actual offense. So when someone's looking at now an incorrect and incorrectly entered offense code, garbage in, garbage out, a keying error, could create a problem. in terms of if the king, if it's one number off and make up a number, 720 is FSA eligible and 721 is an offense that's ineligible. So a keying error could result in someone being identified as ineligible when they're actually eligible. But it's just an internal code. The real information, what you really have to pay attention to, is what is on the judgment and that offense code, because that's what FSA is looking at. So if you're looking at a sentence computation and the narrative data, which will include the 18 or 21 USC or whatever it is, if that doesn't match the judgment, then the questions need to be asked. Like, hey, my judgment says this and this says this. How are they, how do they link up? So.
All right. Good response there. What's next?
Yeah.
That's a good one.
So we had a question about Social Security benefits. Now, Bruce and I are not experts on Social Security benefits, but when a person is in custody, they are not eligible to receive Social Security benefits. That's just spelled out in the law in terms of Social Security. So then the question came up was, well, I'm in home confinement and I went to apply and they told me I was ineligible. That's because with pre-release home confinement, that is still an official confinement. That is still...
You're still in Bureau custody.
You're still in Bureau custody. You're still serving your sentence. So therefore, Social Security is off the table. Now you can, if I remember correctly, you can apply, and Bruce, you might remember this. I think you can apply as early as 6 months prior to your release. It's either 90 days or 6 months, but I want to say it's as early as 6 months you can start the paperwork.
Yeah, right. So now with the internet, it's a lot quicker, hopefully, God willing.
Lots of things are.
Yeah.
I just renewed my passport, and from start to finish, I got it in under 2 weeks. Or I got it in 2 weeks. Yeah, I was like amazed. Did the whole thing online.
Okay.
Yeah. A question about RDAP, and you can handle this one better than me. Question was just, do you really get a whole year off? And of course, I know the law says up to a year off. Do you want to go into those details?
That's it. Yeah, sure. We can go into that. Let's think about the mechanics of RDAP real quick. Typically, the program is 9 months in the institution. It's a 9 month long program, typically in the institution. Sometimes a little bit more, depending. Rarely is it less. The other thing we like to say is that you have to have at least 4 months of your aftercare, your TDAP. Okay. Now, usually we would want to see 6 months, but depending on resources and allocation, you need to have 4 months. And the reason why you need to have 4 months is that's what's needed for the 3621E to activate, to get that early release part, for you to really get your 3621E release method. That's your release method, is 3621E, at least in this. So you need the 4 months. So 9 and 4 is 13 months right there, okay? Sometimes people get 6 or more months halfway house. Now we're up to, right, 9 and 6 is 15 months. Okay, so let's think about this, right? And Susan knows the cutoff, but the folks with longer sentences, right, that have served longer sentences can get up to the full year. But if your sentence, sometimes folks with the shorter sentence might get 6 months off their sentence, or they might get 9 months off their sentence, okay, depending on how long their sentence has been. So that's why they say it's up to a year. So
now, doesn't the Bureau have, I think I remember from our book, which I could grab, or you could grab.
A chart, yeah.
Yeah, we put a chart in there. So if you've got 40, 50 months to go, you're in good shape. But it seems like if you have less time remaining to serve, they automatically cut you down. Like you're right. Already max out at right. 6 months off or 9 months off.
Right. So I'll find it here in a minute. But it's definitely, so just depending on your sense. So if it's less than 30 months, it's usually the reduction benefit is 6 months. If the sentence length is 31 to 36 months, it's usually 9 months. And that's kind of where most folks are at. 37 months and beyond is 12-month reduction in sentence. So
it really behooves somebody, if they're looking at they're eligible or they believe they're eligible and they need the treatment program because they have a substance abuse history and they could potentially benefit, but they don't have a real long sentence. They need to be carrying themselves down to psychology, like,
and getting an interview
day one.
You want to be interviewed by psychology staff. That could be a drug treatment specialist or another designee from the psychology department to see if you qualify for the program. And then if you do qualify for the program, you'll be put on a waiting list. And then if they don't have it at your institution, they'll do an eventual program transfer to get you to an RDAP program. If they have it at your institution, you'll be on the local DAP waiting list. And wait to get in. Now, just remember, they go by release dates, right? Obviously. So that's why in some circles you need to have 27 or more months left on your sentence just to even take it. Because remember the math I just told you, it's about 15 months between the TDAP and the institution just to take the program itself. So that's why, you know, you need a little bit more time, closer to 30 plus months to get into that. Why? Because you're not going to get, you know, oftentimes you're not going to get in immediately. You got to wait several months to get in.
Well, and they have you start as cohorts. It's not it's not like asynchronous learning where you can come in and you can just start. You've got to wait for the next cohort
to come up.
Right.
But most of the folks get around the 9 month reduction, and that's only because of their sentence length. Right. So it's a great program. You learn a lot. Yeah, Susan, I highly recommend it. I don't know if I want to open that can of worms, but we've had on other shows, we've talked about, well, somebody said, well, look, between my FSA time or whatever, I'm guaranteed this with FSA versus do I really need to take the RDAP program or whatever? And we always err on the side, I think, Susan, saying take the RDAP program if you can take it because you're going to get your FSA, you know, pretty much anyway, you know.
Well, and with short sentences, the one thing that taking the RDAP program, if you're eligible for that time off, or even if you're not eligible for the time off, the program includes at least 120 days in halfway house. And for, you know, as chaotic as it's been with halfway house time, RDAP folks are getting their time.
Yeah.
So, you know, plus it's a very good program.
Right.
All right. So let's see. We're still getting a lot of questions and the kind of two questions go together. Is the expansion of home confinement really going to happen? Was one of the questions. And then the other was like, what's going on with the SCA and FSA placement? And, It's been a chaotic couple of weeks now. The Bureau issued a press release regarding the expansion of direct home confinement, not home confinement. And direct home confinement, what they're talking about is folks leaving the institution and going to home confinement, not having to go to the halfway house first. And in that same press release, they talked about the reserving of halfway house space for folks that need it. And that's really important when you consider what the SCA placement's about. We talked about it a couple shows ago, or maybe it was last week. I don't know.
Yeah, but I think we need to go over it again and again.
Yeah.
Because it's got to
understand. It's tough.
They don't play well together.
They don't at all. So very quickly, SCA placement is a needs-based placement. That means folks that have been down a long time, maybe they have limited job skills, maybe because of their sentence, they've been out of the job market for obviously a long time. Maybe they don't have family that's willing to take them in, or maybe they've got someone who's willing to take them in, but the extent of it is a temporary situation. You know, right. I've got a sleeper sofa you're welcome to for a few weeks. You know, they don't have a place to go. They need a job. They need a roof over their head. That's what halfway house, that's what transitional pre-release residential placement is supposed to be about. Then the FSA came in and the FSA made halfway house or pre-release placement in general a reward, a way to get out of prison. And by out of prison, we mean out of the institution, prison facility, getting in back into the community earlier. That is completely different than what SCA is about. We, even before the Second Chance Act, the standard admission and orientation presentation lecture that I would give when it talked about halfway house was, it is not a reward for good behavior. It is not a means of getting out of prison earlier. It is a program. It is a needs-based transitional program. And then the FSA came along and we threw all that out the window. The problem is only some 65%, this is based on the DOJ report that was issued in June of last year, so we should be getting a new annual report in the next month or so, right? They come out about the same time. But in last year's report, 65% of the population was ineligible to receive FSA, either because of their offense, so they were statutorily ineligible, or because they had a high or medium risk level. And that leaves, if we do the math, about 35% of the population. And of that 35% of the population, we have a very small percent of individuals that have relative to the Bureau, you know, some in total population, probably upwards of 60% of the population has more than 10 years to serve. So what's ended up happening is we have a small number of folks who are just sucking up the community-based resources. And so this memo came out and said, this press release came out and said, hey, we need to put those people, the folks that have a home to go to, get a job set up, we need to get them out into home confinement. The problem is the folks with short sentences, shorter, I should say, not short, but shorter sentences, are earning time credits right up to their release date. And currently, and I'm going to say currently as of, yeah, we'll say currently, those home confinement eligibility days, which are fixed and limited based on the Second Chance Act, are applied to the release date, not the conditional date, which creates a problem in terms of maximizing direct home confinement, because the memo that was signed by the director and spilled out into the internet, as much things do, said, case managers, you need to be submitting based on the conditional dates, which is 100% accurate. That's not a new statement. You know, we were saying that 2 years ago, 3 years ago, when I was still working, got to use, as soon as we had that conditional date information, which was now October, we've had a conditional release date calculator for almost 2 years now. So we've been saying that. The problem is when you give someone, when you say, okay, we want direct home confinement based on the conditional date, we see folks all the time that their home confinement eligibility date is actually after their conditional date. Now, we are hearing some things that the Bureau is looking at some different things, and there was a big kerfuffle over stacking. And we're hearing that they're kind of revising and extending their remarks. We'll have to wait and see. And we're not going to presume anything, but it does seem like they are looking at stacking. And again, SCA is a needs-based placement. So every individual regardless of their offense, their length of sentence, violent, nonviolent, it doesn't matter. Every individual is reviewed under the five-factor review for needs-based placement. And so that can be a recommendation of anything from nothing to 365. But the question, if we're being honest, and Bruce and I like to be very honest with when we're talking to folks, if you already have 12, 14, 18, 20 months of pre-release time that you've earned under FSA, do you have a need for more? Not that you want more, and you want, we understand that everybody wants as much as they can get. 100%. Everybody wants to get out of the prison and closer to home as quickly as possible. But the Second Chance Act isn't about getting out of prison sooner. So therefore, if an individual has needs and maybe they've accumulated a year's worth of pre-release placement, maybe we do want to see them get an additional, recommend them from additional 6 months of halfway house. I'm just making numbers up. Mm-hmm. So that at the end of that period of time, they can transfer to home confinement and spend 100% of their FSA time, that reward for doing good stuff, in home confinement rather than burn up halfway house time for those FSA days. Something to consider. And I think we'll have more to come on that topic. But it's a tricky topic, you know, when you're assessing, when the two laws are contrary to each other.
And, you know, here we are, it's June 2025. They're still operating under a continuing resolution, meaning that they don't have a formal budget. Okay. They're operating on a prior budget, and they're just allowed to kind of tread water, if you will, financially through the next year, which is where we're at now. So that's kind of a red flag, right? We're on a continuing resolution. Now, you and I are active in this space through our consumers, where, you know, some of the places as big as Dallas Fort Worth is, or whatever, for example, folks are having to go to other places because Dallas Fort Worth halfway house and home confinement spots are full.
Right.
And so they're considering East Texas, Louisiana, South Texas, other place, Houston, huge place, pretty much full, considering people in South Texas or whatever. It's like, wow. So we have all this feel good stuff happening with these memorandums and these directives, but in some of these major locales, they're already backed up. They can't give people a bed that's not there.
And even if we got a new budget today, we have new money. The contracting process to expand those, one of the things, and you and I have been talking to anyone who will listen to us about the things that need to change. One of the things that the Bureau needs is expedited contracting authority. They need to be able to expand that. Yeah. Halfway houses are really difficult. Most communities don't want a new halfway house. You know, again, we can all talk about how important reentry is, and it is, and you and I as professionals understand that. But convince a local community, and everyone can give lip service to how important reentry is, as long as it's in someone else's neighborhood.
And then for a new contract, they have to be within so many feet of a bus. They have to be so many feet away from this. They have to have a job developer on site to help get jobs. They have to have room and services for females, adequate emergency services, adequate fire services, adequate food services in-house, et cetera. So it's an endeavor. You just can't build, you know, pop up.
100%. And it's that's part of the reason, I think, for this direct initiative to expand the direct home confinement. It would be easier to expand the number to expand a contract to accommodate more home confinement, because then we're just buying equipment, right? More ankle monitors, cell phones, wristbands, whatever they're using, right? That's different in different places. It is easier to expand that than for an existing halfway house to add beds via construction or take over the house next door and try to get the community on board with more folks coming out, because that's what has to happen. Just saw a video that the new deputy director, Josh Smith, produced a while ago with his Fourth Purpose Foundation. And he was talking about conversations he was having. He was involved with a commission in Tennessee, talking to the governor. And he made the statement that while there's all these good things that we can do, the first thing we have to do is change the public's perception about inmates, prison, and correctional workers, because they have to care. And if the citizens don't care, legislatures certainly aren't going to provide more money.
Right. And look, folks, the forerunner of all this was the CARES Act. We had COVID-19. Whoa, thousands of inmates went into their homes and were in home confinement. And the recidivism rate was very low, that we understand. It was a very low recidivism rate. It was a success having these inmates released to the RRCs and or the home. And so that, I think that's a good forerunner to say, hey, this is okay because we've done this in mass, right?
But you got to remember, under the CARES Act, it was direct home confinement, but there were additional barriers. I mean, in terms of qualifiers. Yeah. Not everybody, even if they had health risks, they had to meet other qualifications. And I think that's the piece there. If you actually saw the congressional testimony, and I cannot remember the gentleman's name right now, but that was one of the issues he pointed out. Like, we saw the success. They were the very lowest risk, lowest need individuals. Why aren't we moving them to home confinement, freeing up the resources for the individuals that need it? You know, we should be, that's the whole risk need responsivity model, is we push the resources, the intensity of the resources, the amount of the resources on the folks that need them, not this kind of blanket give it to everybody.
But in some sense, now this is Second Chance Act a little bit kind of, I'm not saying the opposite, but you have a guy that's been locked up in a penitentiary, didn't get to qualify. I mean, you know what I mean? But he needs a home. He needs a place
The Second Chance Act is saying, here's somebody with high needs. We should be giving them a longer placement.
Exactly.
In the halfway house with the employment specials. You know, I remember when they rolled out computers so that the population could send emails. We had people that were afraid to touch the computer. They had been down in prison long enough. They had never used a keyboard or a computer. Mm-hmm. And we had, I remember trust fund going out and training cadres of individuals on each of the housing units to show some of these older individuals who had been in custody a long time. I was at a penitentiary at that time, how to use the computer. It's not going to break when you type on it. And it was really developmental, but that's what the halfway houses were about, right? You'd have people coming out. They've never worked. You still have people if you look at some PSRs of folks who have been who have lengthy sentences, some of them have never had legal employment.
Right.
Ever. They came into prison. They didn't have a high school diploma. They didn't have any job skills. And maybe they've accomplished some things, but how do you write a resume to apply for a job when you've been out of the workforce for 18 years? Right. And where were you? You were in prison. That itself is a challenge in terms of getting someone to give you an opportunity. That's what those specialists in the halfway house do. That's why it's so important. That's why clogging it up with FSA folks who don't need a halfway house and should be in home confinement is a smart solution. the transition to getting there, still got some hiccups, still got some bumps in the road, but it's absolutely the right thing to do.
So, you know, so all the messaging seems like it's really good and positive messaging. And so you hear the messaging and you think, okay, this is going to happen next week. It isn't. I mean, the First Step Act was created in 2018. It's 7 years later, and this is as far as we are after 7 years. And so some of these things might take another bit of a while to kick in. So hopefully not.
One of the things a lot of folks don't realize is the FSA statute itself had incremental measures built into it. So when folks, you know, and I kind of cringe when politicians start talking, bless their hearts, and they talk about 2018, by law, the Bureau wasn't required, because there was the infrastructure that had to be built, to start applying time credits until 2022.
Right.
So time credits have only been under the law, and the Bureau has been compliant with it. I know not everybody thinks that or likes to say that, but has been compliant since January of 2022. There was the interim phase from January to in the fall of 2022 and before the auto calculator rolled out. And so there was some interim steps going on, and then it rolled out and a whole bunch of people went into opt-out status, despite being told for close to a year, you've got to get everything in place because when it goes live. So then the Bureau pulled back and said, okay, and gave everyone another 2.5 months to bring it to December 31st of 2022 to get themselves compliant, get all those needs assessments done. So it was really January of 2023. I remember the week painfully. I was in Denver. It was not a good week. January of 2023 was when we relaunched that auto calculator after just haranguing people in the institution, get your assessments done. Because that was the biggest challenge. Assessments weren't done. They just thought, well, it's okay.
Or I'll sign up for a class and drop it real quick or whatever.
There was a lot of, you know, things going on. And so, you know, thousands of individuals that had gotten credit in the interim period, those credits evaporated because they were awarded based on programming days with the understanding that they were fully compliant, and they weren't. So even though it's been since 2018, this has been a phased implementation. It was, like I said, we were fully automated in January of 2023. In October of 2023, the conditional calculator rolled out, which pushed a whole bunch of people into the halfway house system. In October of 2024, they rolled out the conditional placement calculator. So it really has been a staged development. I am very excited about this current phase in terms of recognizing the need to use more direct home confinement. And like I said, it'll be interesting to see how the next couple months roll out, especially once they get a budget.
Right. Another question we had was, can I earn FTCs while I'm in the halfway house and on home confinement?
So yes and no. If someone is going to halfway house under the Second Chance Act only, because they haven't earned 365 days. That means the entire time they are earning right up to their release date. Okay. Again, Second Chance Act Halfway House is a program.
Right. No, but they're still earning federal time credits as they're doing all their sentences.
Right. It's still accumulating.
The whole thing's going toward their sentence. So the answer is yes in that.
Yeah.
In that
Except for individuals who have an FSA conditional placement date, right? That is the maximum amount of time credits. So it doesn't matter what's happening in halfway house, because that's the maximum amount of time credits that they can apply. Because the law had this quirky little line in it that said you can apply the halfway, that you can apply the time credits earned when the amount of credits earned equals the remaining time to serve. That means it doesn't matter after that, unless you get in trouble and then you lose stuff. So don't go right. doing that.
Right.
But it doesn't matter because that is the maximum benefit date. So in the case of folks who are learning less than 365 and only have a conditional release date, the conditional release date is their maximum benefit date. If they were to do the math,
right, that's it.
The amount of credit earned at that point equals the remaining time to serve, which is dropped off their sentence. If they have a conditional placement date, that's the maximum benefit date.
And, you know, we had a client that was waiting for the button to get pushed on the credit, and the button finally got pushed, and her family ran and got her. So, yes.
Yes, that was a little stressful.
That was the thing, a little hiccup with that one. Yeah, it comes down to the wire. It's like, hey, where's my time? Like, well, waiting for that calculator to run. So
yeah. So, and you know, one of the advancements that's happened this year, it's right. now been in place for what, 4 months now, for the folks in the community, the calculator is running nightly. That means
folks in the halfway house or home confinement. Go ahead.
Yes, halfway house or home confinement. They're getting that credit. Their 30 days happens and they go, whoop, 30 days, it posts. And so we have a lot of folks who have that immediate release. It's like, yep, when you wake up on Tuesday, you will be released. They'll be calling you to come in.
Yeah.
The same thing goes with the home confinement, because again, their release date is moving each month. Each 30 days, their home confinement eligibility is moving. So we like to manually calculate and say, okay, this is the date. Talk to your case manager in the halfway house, because the halfway house folks don't have that information.
Right.
They've got the official release date and the official home confinement eligibility date.
At that moment. And so that's the frustrating element. We talked about this last week. Brian talked about it every show, that Susan has been painstakingly manually calculating projected home confinement eligibility dates. Because if this is moving forward, so is that. But yet there's no real roster or mechanism that shows that date at this time. It's not there.
Right. And if the Bureau moves to that, like lock, stock, and barrel, to looking at home confinement eligibility as a function of the conditional release date, well, that becomes easy. Then it's just a matter of knowing like how many days you have, because home confinement days is a fixed block of time. It doesn't change. It merely moves. So yeah, if they move to that, then that's going to be a whole lot easier.
It'd be
100% easier.
And then hopefully case managers will put in referrals based on seeing that and saying, hey, wait a minute, their home confinement date is actually this. So I might maybe want to refer a couple months of RSC placement, maybe not, you know what I mean? But, you know.
Depends on what they're going to need. Like if there's an expectation that somebody has some needs, maybe they don't have a lot of needs, but they have some needs, making a recommendation that puts them into halfway house in advance of their eligibility to get things in place. You know, you do have to have a job.
Yeah.
And if you don't have a job, then you need to get one. And you may have lots of options. You may have people that are willing to give you a job, but they're not going to commit until you're sitting in their office and you're filling out that application. So they still may need, even if it's small, 30, 45 days of halfway house placement in advance of home confinement eligibility in order to get everything in place.
Driver's license, job, there's stuff that you can be doing to get in place in that first week or two of the halfway house. It's just getting situated anyway.
Some institutions have relationships with the local DMV. And if you live in the state where you're going to be released, so if you're in a Texas facility and your facility has a relationship with that local DMV and you can get your license renewed, awesome. But if you're not, you know, if you're in Florida and you're released into Texas, or you're in Oklahoma and released into Texas, that's not going to do you a lot of good. So again, the halfway house serves a very valuable purpose. Had a question talking about credits, we've talked about the difference between GCT and FTC, but the person asked about GCT, FTC, and EGT. which haven't heard that. That's
in a minute,
depending on what jurisdiction. Yeah. So really quickly, we all know GCT stands for good conduct time. That is the 54 days a year of your sentence, for each of your sentence, unless you didn't, you have unsatisfactory status as far as GED, and then you're only getting 42 days. But we always talk about getting our high school diplomas. GED is really important. But that is that time that is front loaded. It is prorated, based on your months. It is approximately 4.5 days per month. It's 54 days a year. And that is front loaded. Time credits, FTCs, federal time credits. Those are earned as you earn. They are earned credit. Therefore, they are not front loaded. The tools, the conditional release date and the conditional placement date. And if we get a conditional home confinement date down the road, those are all for planning purposes. You should not take them.
Doesn't mean you get it. Yeah, it doesn't mean you get it. It's just a conditional marker.
Right. And it can change. We know for a fact that the conditional release date changes for folks when they're walking in the door as a new commit, right? They come in the door, they have a good conduct time date. They get all their stuff done, stuff gets loaded. They get a conditional date based on the 10-day rate. Four or 7 months down the road, when they go to the 15-day rate, they get a new date. But it can also go the reverse. You lose your mind and decide you're not going to pay your FRP, and you go into FRP review status, and now you're not getting programming days. Guess what happens when you're in opt-out status? Your conditional dates disappear, right? And then they don't reappear until you get back into programming days. And then guess what? You've lost a number of programming days. So your conditional release date is going to reflect the loss of those programming days. So those are those two things. So EGT, depending on what jurisdiction.
Three minutes.
Oh, very quickly. EGT is extra good time for old law cases. Also, it's also known as meritorious time. And those are applied to the very small, small number of individuals, most of them being elderly, who are old law cases. DC inmates, certain DC cases, have an education good time. They also have an extra good time. So depending on what sentence, what law you were prosecuted under determines if you have EGT that's education or EGT that's extra good time. So, but none of that applies to FSA at this time. The FSA statute only applies to new law federal inmates. We've talked about the DC guys. DC did pass a law, and it's a hot mess, and it's honestly not implementable. I don't know how they're going to try to figure it out, but, you know, God love them. They'll have to figure that out. So we still have several questions still. So, you know, we'll try to answer those to the individuals that posted them, but we'll hang on to these and we'll add to them, and maybe we'll do another Q&A show.
Yeah. Or we can just finish them off next time.
Next time.
And then transition on to our material as needed. So, yeah, all right. Well, folks, another fantastic show today. As promised, we answered some questions for everybody. Please join our Facebook group, Early Release from Federal Prison, you know, First Step Act. It's a public Facebook group. We're just about 10,000, I think, something like that.
11. You're over 11.
11.
Now.
Okay, 11,000.
I don't know really how much you're at 12, but you're over 11.
And then we have a YouTube channel, First Step Act. We have our shows here, our podcasts on the LA Talk Radio site. They're archived. You can download them for free. We're also on Apple Podcasts and several of the other podcast aggregators. So you can get this podcast and download it for free and listen to some very informative stuff about First Step Act. Get our new edition of the Blue Book, Unlocking Federal Time Credits. And yeah, so all righty then. Anything else, Susan?
No, the make sure you when you do go on to Amazon, you search for the second edition. If you pull up the old edition, it'll say it's not in publication anymore because it's not. But yeah, look for that second edition.
Awesome. All right, everybody. Well, have a great week, and we'll see y'all here next time on Federal Prison Authority Presents Around the Block. Take care, everybody. Have a great week. See you.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to Federal Prison Authority Presents Around the Block with Bruce Cameron and Susan Giddings, only on LA Talk Radio.